This episode is brought to you by Shopify. Forget the frustration of picking commerce platforms when you switch your business to Shopify, the global commerce platform that supercharges your selling wherever you sell. With Shopify, you'll harness the same intuitive features, trusted apps, and powerful analytics used by the world's leading brands. Sign up today for your $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/tech, all lowercase. That's shopify.com/tech.
Russia claims more troop withdrawals near Ukraine, despite Western skepticism. Plus, China reports easing inflation, though that doesn't mean all smooth sailing. And growing calls for a U.S. national technology policy to help America's tech giants.
When the excesses of the current internet landscape get to be too severe, then other countries are going to take over the job of regulating.
It's Wednesday, February 16th. I'm Luke Vargas with The Wall Street Journal. Here's the AM edition of What's News, the top headlines and business stories moving your world today. Russia's defense ministry says its troops are withdrawing from Crimea and returning to their bases in mainland Russia after completing military drills. The move comes a day after President Vladimir Putin said Moscow had withdrawn other troops from the Ukrainian border, a claim that U.S. and European officials said they'd seen no evidence to support. As Journal Moscow correspondent Matthew Luxmore explains, the troops Russia says are leaving Crimea aren't going far.
The problem is those bases are near the borders of Ukraine, which means that the 130,000 strong Russian troop buildup around Ukraine in recent weeks is not set to be affected by this development. On the other hand, this is the second day of what can definitely be seen as a de-escalation of Russia's posture. There's kind of an upbeat atmosphere on the very same day that Western officials warned Russia might choose to stage its big invasion of Ukraine. And despite these cautious signs that Russia is moving some of its troops back, it's very important to remember that the situation does remain tense and has by no means been resolved.
Russia has repeatedly denied any plans for an invasion of Ukraine. The former president of Honduras has been arrested following a U.S. extradition request. U.S. prosecutors allege Juan Orlando Hernandez, who left office just 3 weeks ago, conspired to smuggle more than 550 tons of cocaine into the U.S. over an 18-year period. In exchange, he allegedly received millions of dollars in bribes that he used to finance his political career. Analysts say the former Trump administration overlooked allegations of Hernandez's drug ties in exchange for his cooperation on migration, and that the Biden administration began to distance itself from Hernandez. Hernandez has consistently denied any involvement in drug trafficking or corruption. ViacomCBS is changing its name to Paramount Global and will refer to itself as Paramount. It underscores the company's emphasis on its Paramount Plus streaming service and invokes the heritage of its more than century-old film studio. The move comes as media companies increasingly shift from traditional TV towards streaming services, which show more potential for growth. And home rental giant Airbnb has posted record annual revenue and expects to top its pre-pandemic bookings levels this quarter amid signs of a travel rebound. Airbnb's success was driven by lower marketing spend thanks to increased name recognition. The company also cited soaring demand for suburban rentals as remote work becomes an increasing fixture of life. We've spoken at length about the inflationary pressures pushing the U.S. Federal Reserve to prepare to raise interest rates as early as next month. But what about the situation in the world's second largest economy, China? China's National Bureau of Statistics is out with its latest inflation data, and here to crunch the numbers is Journal Markets editor Quentin Webb. Hey, Quentin.
Hi there.
So we just got two key measures for Chinese inflation. What did that data tell us?
That's right. So we had both producer price and consumer price inflation data for January for China. And on both measures, inflation is decelerating in China. So PPI rose about 9%, which was slower than the previous month. And consumer price inflation rose by a very moderate 0.9% year over year. So what that tells us is that on both counts, inflationary pressures in China seem to be easing. And that's good news, effectively, because it gives Chinese authorities, if they need it, more room to ease monetary policy. In effect, China is moving in a very different direction from much of the rest of the world, where, as we know well, inflationary pressures are severe, and that's forcing central banks to tighten policy.
I understand that pork prices played a large role in some of this data. Could you just break that down for us?
Well, yes. So when we think about consumer prices in China, because pork makes up such a staple of the Chinese diet, that's often a kind of big swing factor in how prices move. And at the moment, it is exerting downward pressure on prices. So that is helping lead to this kind of moderating of consumer price inflation.
You mentioned how the Fed is hiking rates to meet rising inflation, but how are Chinese authorities likely to respond to this data?
Well, so what this means for the Chinese authorities is there is more room to ease policy effectively. So Chinese growth is rather sluggish, but authorities would struggle to cut interest rates or otherwise stimulate the economy if inflation was running too hot. But given that in China, the target is 3% annualized consumer price inflation, there's plenty of room to kind of make policy a bit easier and support growth.
That was Journal Markets editor Quinton Webb. Quinton, thanks.
Thanks very much.
Coming up, imagine a privacy protection label as simple as the nutrition facts on a box of cereal. It's among the regulatory proposals for what could be America's first ever national technology policy. We've got more on that after the break.
Join the Wall Street Journal at the Future of Everything Festival on May 21st to 23rd in New York City, where diverse global newsmakers share unique perspectives on navigating a changing world. Immerse yourself in live performances, explore pioneering technologies, and indulge in the city's inventive culinary scene. As a podcast listener, enjoy 20% off current ticket rates with code PODCAST. Visit wsj.com/FOEF podcast to secure your spot.
The U.S. does not have a national technology policy, but the Independent Future of Tech Commission thinks that it should. And today, they released a series of recommendations about what that policy could look like, with proposed rules on everything from the handling of personal data to privacy protections for children. Lawmakers from both sides of the aisle have previously said they back this commission's work. So does that mean these rules could soon form the basis of new legislation? Here with more on that is Journal tech policy reporter John McKinnon. John, welcome.
Hey, how are you?
I'm doing terrific, thanks. Let's get under the hood of these recommendations. What is the commission proposing?
Well, I think a lot of what they're proposing is going to sound pretty good to people. They're making a lot of recommendations on privacy that would give people a lot better sense about what's happening with their own personal data. They're proposing, for instance, a standardized privacy protection label, kind of like the label that you see on the side of, you know, your cereal box. And they're proposing a lot of new limits on the ways companies can collect personal data. Essentially, they'd be limited to, you know, the data that they need to provide their service. So that foreseeably, you know, could limit significantly some of the data that some companies are collecting when the data has really nothing to do with the services they're providing to you, like, you know, weather prediction or something like that. And then on the children's front, they're talking about prohibiting collection of data altogether from teens who are 16 and under, and that would be a significant change from, you know, the current limitation. There are limitations right now, but they basically only apply to kids who are 12 and under. So that would be a pretty significant expansion of kids' protections.
Another recommendation centers around supporting local news outlets. Could you explain that one?
Yeah, another one of the effects of the modern technology landscape has been sort of the decimation of local media. We're all familiar with the struggles of local newspapers and even local TV and radio stations. And a lot of that is because the advertising that supported those media is kind of dried up because it's all shifted to the internet. So what they're proposing here is creation of a fund that could be funded by the internet companies and would provide significant new funding for local media. And they haven't quite refined all the details of this. It could be that the money will go to support nonprofit media, but it could be that it could support just the struggling legacy media that we're all seeing.
John, has the Future of Tech Commission explained why now in particular would be a good time for the U.S. to draft a national technology policy?
I think that they feel that while the internet has been a tremendous boon to the U.S. and the whole technology landscape has just been a tremendous economic engine for the U.S., they have some fear that the U.S. might be losing a little bit of its edge, particularly when it comes to regulating what has been really a little bit of a Wild West ecosystem here. They do have this concern that the U.S. edge might be slipping away, not because of a lack of innovation, but because of a lack of oversight and regulation. And when the excesses of the current internet landscape get to be too severe, then other countries are going to take over the job of regulating. And that's kind of what's begun to happen with things like GDPR. And so I think these commission members are interested in trying to reclaim U.S. leadership in this area. And underlying that is just the reality that back in the 90s, when Congress was really trying to encourage the development of the internet, they passed a series of laws that helped the internet ecosystem begin to flourish and helped these now gigantic internet companies begin to take root. And so now part of the job of Congress and the U.S. government is to try to come up with a comprehensive way of regulating the internet and the companies that have grown up, and also to try to, in some cases, go back and dial back some of the things that they did to help the internet back in the 90s.
And finally, what is the chance that some of these proposals are going to be embraced by Congress and maybe put into law?
Definitely some of these will be tough to swallow. And, you know, it's hard for Congress to do a lot in this area. It's just proven to be very, very, very difficult, both because of the concerns that the technology companies have and just the sort of inevitable partisan nature of some of the debates that ensue. I think that a lot of these ideas actually are already under consideration. I think these recommendations will probably give a boost to some of the efforts on Capitol Hill, particularly on privacy, children's privacy, what you might think of as transparency. There's an effort underway to get the tech companies to be more transparent about how their algorithms work.
John McKinnon is a tech policy reporter at the Journal's DC Bureau. John, thank you.
Thank you.
And finally, our smart devices may not be as smart as we think they are, especially when it comes to figuring out our location. However, that could soon change with the continued rollout of ultra-wideband technology, which helps devices zero in on their location with an accuracy of 1 centimeter. Our technology columnist Christopher Mims explains this technology could help us with everything from unlocking our car without a key to finding the exact location of a condiment jar in a sprawling supermarket.
We think, oh, our phones have GPS and we have Google Maps and Apple Maps, so they kind of know where they are, but they really don't. Like, they know to within a few meters. And without that ability to place themselves in space, all these future applications that people get so excited about, like augmented reality and smart eyeglasses and stuff like this, it's kind of impossible. So technologists had been far-seeing enough to realize, like, hey, our devices are really going to need to know exactly where they are in 3D space. And once we give them that ability, that'll be pretty useful.
And that's What's News for Wednesday morning. We'll be back tonight with a new show. I'm Luke Vargas with The Wall Street Journal. Thanks for listening.
This message comes from Viking, committed to exploring the world in comfort. Journey through the heart of Europe on an elegant Viking longship with thoughtful service, destination-focused dining, and cultural enrichment on board and on shore. And every Viking voyage is all-inclusive with no children and no casinos. Discover more at Viking.com.